Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Hello and welcome to the World Weekly Podcast. I'm Daniel Dombey. First round of Brazil's most important and most dramatic election for decades takes place on October the 7th, and it's a choice that many people would not like to make. Among the frontrunners to take over from Michel Temer, himself an unelected president, are Jair Bolsonaro, a right-wing populist and former army captain currently recovering from a knife wound, and Fernando Haddad, a late replacement for Lula da Silva, the former president who is in jail for corruption. This is perhaps an unappetizing choice, but at a time of emerging market stress and continued political and judicial crisis in Brazil itself, it's indisputably a vitally important one. So what does this mean for Brazil and the region more generally, as well as for emerging markets? Joining me on the line from Sao Paulo is the FT's Brazil Bureau Chief Joe Leahy. And here in the studio is Jonathan Wheatley, a former Brazil correspondent, now one of the FT's top emerging market correspondents. Joe, can you tell us just what is the attraction of Bolsonaro? And how did a person who has a fairly strong right-wing background get to be in such pole position in this election?
Yes, Dan, Bolsonaro is a very quixotic figure. Only a few years ago, he was on the fringes of Brazilian politics for his extreme views on everything from homosexuality to women, to race issues, to native Indian issues. He once told a fellow congresswoman that she didn't deserve to be raped, for instance. And that kind of comment for Bolsonaro is quite frankly a normal comment. So for years he was on the fringes, but with recent events in Brazil, huge corruption scandals that have swept through the traditional political classes, discrediting the center of Brazilian politics, a massive recession, the worst in Brazil's history, people have started to look for alternatives. And Bolsonaro, for them, is the one, is the only person who they see as offering something different from this traditional Brazilian politics that has been going on now for 30 years since the military dictatorship left. He's managed to also placate investors and the markets with his appointment of a financier, an investor, Paulo Guedes, as his economic advisor. And he's a liberal economist, Chicago University trained, and that's managed to bring over some of the business sector to Bolsonaro's side. So it's really quite a surprising development that Bolsonaro has surged. But it is in line with what we're seeing in the rest of the world with the rise of Trump and Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines. So it's along those lines. And similar to Trump, he's used social media to rise. He hasn't come up through the traditional channels of television in Brazil. He's been very good on Twitter, Facebook and WhatsApp. And that's really fueled his rise.
And just to give us an idea, where are the relative standings in the polls right now? And of course, that comes with the usual health warnings that in most recent elections, or at least that's the way it seems, the polls haven't exactly been right all the time.
Yes, well, in the most recent Datafolha poll, Bolsonaro was at 26%, and that's nearly twice his nearest competitors, which are both on the left, Ciro Gomes and Fernando Haddad, who is replacing the former president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, in this race. So he's well ahead of the others. And if he keeps rising over the next few days and gets above 30%, then his chances of victory start to increase in the second round of Brazil's election, which is on the 28th of October.
Now, Jonathan, why is this election so important in terms of where Brazil's economy is right now? And can you say anything about what Bolsonaro's prospectus, such as it is, means in the economic area?
Brazil's been on an extraordinary journey the last few years. I think investors that we obviously look at a lot have been broadly optimistic about Brazil for at least the past 2 years, when it first became apparent, or even before that, when it became apparent that Dilma Rousseff, who was the successor to Lula da Silva, that she was going to be impeached because her policies, she was a return to some of the big status policies that Brazil appeared to have thrown off over the past decade and a half or so. And she really took Brazil into its big recession. It lost about 7%, 7 points of GDP in 2015, 2016. And as soon as there was a sign that she was on the way out, investors started to cheer up and pile in. And they've been kind of convinced ever since then that Brazil is on the verge of having a pro-reform, pro-business government. Brazil kind of got it under Michel Temer, who took office when Dilma was impeached in 2016, in August. But even that government, which was pretty much a kamikaze government with one mission that was going to do the reforms that Brazil needs and then retire from politics, even they have been able to do pretty much nothing. And despite that failure, investors still seem to have kept the faith that come the election, there'd be a new pro-reform government. And I think really over the past couple of months, as the whole of the emerging world investment universe has kind of woken up to the strong dollar and rising US rates and the drain on cheap dollar liquidity that's been a big driver of EM for so many years. As that has come to the fore, investors have kind of woken up to the idea that, hang on, we might not get a pro-reform government next year. And I think they've begun to twig a bit more about what the likelihood is, A, of Bolsonaro believing in reforms. And as Joe says, Paulo Guedes is certainly a reformer, but that doesn't guarantee that Bolsonaro is going to listen to him. And secondly, even if Bolsonaro was Brazil's most crusading reformer, he probably wouldn't get anything through Congress. What strikes me as ironic about all this at the moment is that the kind of dark horse in this election until recently, Paulo Haddad, that Joe mentioned, who, if anybody is going to get into the second round and beat Bolsonaro, it's probably him. He's actually a serious person. And although the program that the PT is running is very kind of anti-reform and would actually try and undo some of the very small reforms that have been done, he's a serious guy. He believes in letting Petrobras, the oil company, set prices. He believes in one pension system for all and doing away with the incredibly unfair pension system that benefits the public sector workers to the cost of everybody. So markets could end up getting the kind of person that they want in a way that they least expect. But the trouble is that with what's going on with the dollar and the rest that I mentioned, you really would need a lot of change. And I think Brazil is just not in a place to deliver that change.
Jonathan, thank you for anticipating the next three questions. Joe, if you could pick up from what Jonathan talked about. He talked about Fernando Haddad. Can you tell us a little bit more about the PT candidate who is running for the party that controlled the presidency for most of this century, but seems to be slightly out of kilter with its platform on economics?
Yes, Dan. Fernando Haddad is a fairly enigmatic character because He's a moderate, basically. He ran Sao Paulo for 4 years until 2016, during which time he was a centre-left mayor. He was fiscally responsible for the large part. He instituted a lot of quite progressive ideas while he was here in terms of public transport and other sort of innovations that were welcomed, actually, by many in the upper middle class. And he's now sitting atop a party that has become extremely radicalized over the past few years because of the impeachment of its former president, Dilma, and the jailing of Lula, which has enraged the party. They described the impeachment of Dilma as a coup, just to give you a sense of the sort of anger that's there. And economically, they really do want to take the party back to where it was under Lula 8 years ago, when it was a big spending kind of government, riding a commodity boom, handing out benefits. This is sort of where they say that they want to take the party. And it's going to be very difficult, to be frank, for any government led by Fernando Haddad to sort of manage these pressures, both from within the PT and also from Congress, which is going to be incredibly hostile to the PT. It was already hostile before when it impeached Dilma. Imagine how hostile it's going to be now if another PT president comes back. So it will be a balancing act for Haddad. And I don't know that he has the experience as well to manage such a balancing act. He's been education minister and the mayor of a giant city like Sao Paulo, but to manage a country this divided with a Congress that probably will be extremely conservative is going to be a big challenge.
Jonathan, if I can just ask a more general question. Why does Brazil have problems with governance? In many Latin American countries, we talk about a president that has too much power. It doesn't have to be a Venezuela. In countries like Mexico, traditionally, the president has had an awful lot of power. And yet in Brazil, often it seems that it's almost impossible to get things done. People who are unfortunate to read Brazil's stories over the decades often feel like they're reading the same stories about how difficult it is to get changes done, how difficult it is to reform the pension system or indeed the constitution, which is incredibly detailed. What is this governance issue that Brazil has?
Well, I think you're touching on something really central to Brazil. Answering that question might require rather longer than we've got, and take us a bit deeper back into history. And you could say that part of it is to do with the system of patronage and clientelism, which was, some would argue, was developed in the early days of the Republic because you had such a vast territory with very primitive communications, and the only way to hold the place together was to develop this system of handing out patronage to regional chieftains. And the 20th century descendant of those people are the coronels, the kind of regional oligarchs that hand out favours in return for patronage. They supported the military coup and remain a feature in politics today. But I think perhaps even more than that, over the past 20, 30 years, Brazil, the policy changes that are on the agenda now were on the top of the agenda for the government that is now ending and have been at the top of the policy agenda for at least the last quarter of a century, have just run into the mud every time in Congress. And one of the reasons for that is that you have a hugely divided Congress, about 30 different parties. The business of holding them together is extremely complex. As Joe says, it's very hard for people like the PT. I mean, even under Lula, who was a hugely popular president and had a massive popular mandate, they had to resort to foul means to keep Congress on their side. There was the famous Mensalão scandal, the big monthly payout scandal, where it was revealed that the PT, thanks to the commodities boom, it was the government was pulling in a lot of taxes, there was loads of money floating around, and they were just buying off congressmen on a regular basis. They decided that instead of compromising on policy, they would pay to get allies with money. And if you're not going to go down that road, it's very, very complex. One of the big reforms that's been on the political agenda in the policy agenda in Brazil for an equally long time is political reform. But then you're just asking all the members of Congress to vote against their own careers. And being a congressman and congresswoman in Brazil is a very lucrative way of life. Not only do they earn about 30,000 reals a month as a basic salary, and that continues into retirement, so that's about $7,500 a month or something these days. But they also have all the patronage that they get from their positions, in public life. So it's really a Gordian knot, and it's frankly very hard to see how anybody's going to challenge that. And as I said, even if you had a very pro-reform president in Brazil after the elections, if it's Fernando Haddad, he's going to have the difficulties that Joe has just outlined. And if it's Bolsonaro, he is from a tiny party. He has no political base in Congress. So how on earth that person who... It's very hard to see what he actually believes, but when he does say anything about policy, it is not pro-reform. So to imagine that he is going to push the most complicated reforms through Brazil's Congress that others have tried and failed to do over decades, very hard to see.
So, Joe, this is a question correspondents hate, and therefore the question I'm going to ask you. I'm going to ask you to trot out your crystal ball. We know certain facts out there that voters are fed up of corruption, that it's an incredibly fractured system, that it's a two-round election with lots of parties competing. So what's going to happen? What's your sense of where this is going and the relative strengths and momentum of the different candidates going into this decisive period?
It is a horrible question at this particular moment in Brazil because I was listening the other day to some analysts on local radio saying it's never been this fractured at this point of the debate, of the race, with only 3 weeks to go. But one of the points that they made was that if a candidate has over 30% at this stage of the race, normally they will win in the second round. So if Bolsonaro can try to build up a little bit more support in these next days, then he will be starting to gain the upper hand. On the other hand, it's a bit of a different election because we've got social media sort of front-running it a little bit. So what that means is that Bolsonaro is doing well on social media. So the more dedicated supporters are already behind him, and it's harder for him to build a lead. Whereas a lot of the ordinary people in Brazil, people out in the interior, still watch a lot of television, and they'll probably make their decision later on in the race. So you could see them sort of, as happened in 2014, getting to the poll booth, and then suddenly just, wanting something a little bit more conservative than Bolsonaro. He's quite a scary candidate for a lot of people. I mean, even the fact that he got knifed, it's the kind of thing a lot of people don't really want to see. It's sort of chaos, more guns on the streets, this kind of thing. So it's hard to predict, but I would say if Bolsonaro keeps gaining ground in these next 1 or 2 weeks, he's going to have a lot of momentum.
Admirably fudged, but with a note of clarity as well. Thank you very much indeed, Joe Leahy from Sao Paulo, and to Jonathan Wheatley here in the studio with me. That's all we have for this week. I'm Daniel Dombey. Have a good week.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of The Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.